hello, hello, and welcome to the Loco Edition on a Friday evening. I'm your host, Patricio Roballo. Hope you're doing well. Coming up in the second half of the show, we'll connect with the one and only Chris Rowley from the Shuangka Journal, who let us know what's happening in Ulster County. Word on the street, there's a Blueberry Festival coming up. And before that, we'll turn to the New York Public News Network for a conversation about SNAP benefits and fraud. But first, a proposal for a $15 million in tax-exempt financing connected to the sale and redevelopment of Camp Iroquois Springs in Rock Hill brought a packed crowd to the Thompson Town Hall this week. Congregation Mikcha Chaval is seeking qualified nonprofit bonds through a public finance authority, an agency organized under Wisconsin law. But Town Supervisor Scott Mace told the crowd the town board was not deciding whether the camp could be sold or whether the proposed buildings could be constructed.
Again, this is not about approving the sale. It's not about approving the bonds. It's about deciding if it is a community benefit.
The public finance authority would issue the bonds and loan the money to the camp organization. The borrowers, not the town of Thompson, would be responsible for repayment. The proposal is connected to the Camp Iroquois Springs in Rock Hill, a nearly 200-acre property that has operated for decades as a traditional overnight summer camp. Attorney for the project, attorney Martin Miller, represented the new camp organization, told the board that the money for purchase is already being held in escrow and said the bond financing is not needed to complete the sale.
None of the money that we're speaking about tonight is required for the purchase. The purchase is a done deal.
Miller said the bond money would be instead support improvements and development of the property. But that raised another question. The official public hearing notice says proceeds may be used to finance the acquisition of Camp Iroquois Springs, as well as interest and bond issue costs. After the meeting, Mace told Radio Catskill that he was not sure how to reconcile the two descriptions. Camp paperwork says the camp plans to operate a boys and summer yeshiva that could eventually serve about 600 students. Plans describe new classrooms, staff buildings, study areas, renovations to existing cabins, a new mikveh, and a new shul. The camp estimates nearly $8 million in improvements during the first 2 years. Miller argued that spending is one of the public benefits.
We think that it's a benefit for the community if we're talking about spending $8 million in the first 2 years. And then continuing money as time goes on to improve this property.
Paperwork from the contractor expected to work on the project says construction could support about 30 year-round jobs and use Sullivan County businesses for materials and services. Those estimates were provided by the camp and contractor have not been independently confirmed. Town Council member Melinda Maddow said the board should consider more than just economic activity.
We're deciding if this is a significant public benefit. You know, when I said no, I'm doing this public hearing. And for me, significant public benefit is not just economics. You're looking at the environmental effects, the public usage of the property, the public infrastructure, and how it all fits into our comprehensive plan.
Several residents said they were not opposing the sale of the camp or the religious organization purchasing it. Instead, they questioned why the town should support tax-exempt financing through an out-of-state authority. There were also questions about whether local contractors would actually be used and how the promised investment compares with the possibility that the property could eventually come off the local tax rolls. Sean Reber, a former longtime member of the Sullivan County Industrial Development Agency, the IDA, said the previous camp owner paid for improvements through camp revenue, private investment, or conventional financing.
Every dollar not paid in taxes is made up by somebody else.
Attorney Steve Broshaw, also representing the camp, told the crowd the phase tax-exempt bonds refers to the income tax treatment of interest received by investors. He said that's separate from whether the camp property itself receives local property tax exemption.
They are called tax-exempt bonds because the people who buy them do not have to pay income tax on the interest that they receive.
Marshall also cited the Federal Religious Land Use and Institutional Persons Act, known as RUPILA, arguing that religious education use should not be treated less favorably than a comparable secular use. Some residents saw that as a discussion of court cases and federal law as a warning of possible litigation. Borshaw did not directly threaten legal action against Thompson during the hearing, and noted the proposed construction would be approved through this bond process. Any new buildings, environmental issues, water or sewer changes, or expansion of the camp will still have to go to the town planning board and other local state agencies. The town board took no vote on the public hearing. Instead, May said the public comment would remain open for another 14 days.
We're going to keep the public comment open for 14 days.
After that period, the town board will still have to decide the central question raised throughout the PACT hearing, whether the proposed tax-exempt financing provides a significant public benefit to the town of Thompson. All right, let's move on to the New York Public News Network. New York State Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance Commissioner Barbara Gwynn spoke with New York Now's Chantel Destra to unpack the issue SNAP benefits fraud in the state, funding for the office, and the work that the Child Poverty Reduction Advisory Council does.
Thank you so much for joining us on the show today, Commissioner.
Thank you so much for having me to discuss our important work.
Absolutely. And naturally, with the rising concerns around EBT benefit theft, Governor Kathy Hochul announced that your office will be rolling out chip-based benefit cards for New Yorkers enrolled in the SNAP program. So before we get into the logistics, can you tell us how pertinent this issue is in New York?
Yeah, it's absolutely critical. In New York State and throughout the nation, we are seeing criminal networks find ways to skim benefits off of individuals' EBT cards, their benefit cards. And so that includes a theft of both public assistance cash benefits as well as the supplemental nutrition assistance benefits. So these are essential payments that people need in order to meet their basic needs and purchase food. So it's something that obviously we're working on a number of fronts to try to reduce the amount of fraud. But the most important will be our move to a much more secure card, a chip tap enabled card.
Sure. What will that rollout look like? If I'm a New Yorker and I'm enrolled in the SNAP benefit program, will I need to reach out to your office to get a new card? Or is that something you would send to me directly, proactively?
Right. We will definitely be sending them directly to households receiving public benefits, and we expect to start the rollout in early 2027. Wow. So we have secured the necessary contract approvals in order to issue new cards and also do the back-end system development work that we need to make those cards actually function when people begin to use them.
Yeah, and for the SNAP benefit holders who are unfortunately victims of scams, what are the steps that your office takes to ensure the security of the accounts and really reset the accounts moving forward?
Yeah, so obviously when we issue the mass replacement cards, that will be a much more secure card, and we'll be issuing about 2 million cards throughout New York State. The other steps that we're taking in advance of having these more secure cards is certainly constant reminders to folks that they can lock their cards, and that's what we recommend, is they go to the EBT site and they lock and freeze their card. That means that no one can use it until they're ready to use it. So that's the best protection that people can have. We're also monitoring a bit on the back end, we as well as social services districts, and if need be, we will contact people and say you need to reset your PIN. But really the locking or freezing of the card is the most important thing that households can do to protect their benefits.
Yeah. And with these modern technological advancements and the creative ways that scammers find to really target cardholders, apart from the chip benefit cards, how are you hoping to enhance security moving forward? And what support do you need from the state to do that?
So we have funding in the state budget, which is what we needed in order to go forward and do the mass replacement. It does cost a bit of money, and so we're very thankful that the governor and the legislature provided that funding in the budget that just passed this past spring. In addition to that, like I said, we're doing some other things that to enhance the security of the card, make some changes with respect to our numbering system and other things to make it more, when people are setting their PINs, that it's preventing them from using PINs that have been used repeatedly or maybe easier for thieves to determine what that PIN is. Yeah. But like I said, really moving to chip card technology is one of the best protections that we have for households.
Yeah, absolutely. And you mentioned state funding for your office, but I wanted to ask you about federal funding. There have been a lot of concerns about the uncertainty around federal funding and federal funding cuts. I know last year, a lot of food pantries stepped in when SNAP benefits were on pause for some New Yorkers to help New Yorkers get access to groceries. So How is your office mitigating the uncertainty around federal funding right now?
So last year's shutdown, the 43-day shutdown, was definitely a big problem for the SNAP program and benefit recipients. We did everything we could to move forward and issue benefits as quickly as we could. We took some risk, but they paid off. Right now, we're really, we're working, obviously, with the governor's D.C. office, and the goal really is to prevent any kind of shutdown at the federal level. And at a minimum, would expect that they would continue SNAP benefits so that we're not in the position of needing to delay benefits. Because as you can imagine, that's extraordinarily stressful for families and individuals that, like I said, rely on these benefits to come every single month.
Yeah. And with the federal uncertainty, do you think there's an opportunity that your office would entertain at a state level SNAP program? I know some lawmakers expressed some support for SNAP for All, which would essentially give state level SNAP benefits for immigrant New Yorkers. Is that something your office is supporting, or do you have any interest in entertaining a state level SNAP benefit program?
Yeah. So with the changes that have been made with H.R. 1 with the SNAP program, there are a lot of changes that were not positive, one of which was the further restriction of eligibility for legally present non-citizens. So they did scale back rather than increasing. So now refugees and asylees are no longer eligible for SNAP. And I think that and other provisions about other households is really what SNAP for All was intended to address. Certainly, we are in favor of expanding food benefits to as many households as we can reach in the event that the funding's provided in the state budget.
Yeah. And for our viewers who may be less familiar, can you help us unpack how many New Yorkers really rely on the SNAP benefit program and what your projections for enrollment look like in the years ahead? Okay.
Sure. Right now, we have about 2.8 million New Yorkers who receive SNAP benefits. And so that's a mix of individuals without children. Over half of SNAP households are households that do include either children or an older adult or an individual who has a disability. So it's a large number, 2.8 million recipients that rely on SNAP every week and every month to purchase food. In terms of projections, we definitely are starting to see a slight decline in the number of SNAP households in New York State, and that is something that has been observed throughout the country. Typically, when you see SNAP caseloads go down, it's because there's an improving economy. Mm-hmm. Or they go up when the economy is not doing well and people need additional economic supports. I think that, unfortunately, what we might be seeing now is some reduction in benefit received because of the concern about non-citizens, even if they have citizen children, just a lot of fear that's out there about accessing benefits. And then, of course, the just recently re-enacted strict work requirements that was another part of H.R. 1 that we started implementing in New York in March.
Yeah. And I know your office just recently rolled out the summer EBT program. Yes. So can you tell us what that encompasses and how a New Yorker can know if they qualify to be enrolled in that program? And what does your awareness efforts look like?
Yeah. Yeah. So the summer EBT program is something that we are really happy to administer. It's a great program. It provides $120 per child during the summer months, and it's really intended to address the lack of access to school meals, right? So families who during the year, their children are able to get breakfast, lunch at school, during the summer that goes away. And so it is a benefit that goes to all households who are either, they're either eligible because they receive certain benefits or they're determined eligible based on the school district, based on their eligibility for those free and reduced priced school meals. Mm-hmm. And again, the great thing about summer EBT is most people do not need to apply. Mm-hmm. Like over 95% of the households, we are able to directly identify and directly issue benefits. So we did start issuing benefits in June, and we expect to issue over $200 million in benefits to households throughout New York State this summer.
Wow, that's incredible.
Yeah.
Wow. And lastly, I know that apart from your work with the department, you also co-chair the Child Poverty Reduction Advisory Council. Can you tell us about some of the goals of the council and what New Yorkers can expect in the months ahead?
Yeah. So certainly we're very proud to be able to co-chair the Child Poverty Reduction Advisory Council. The goal of the council is to reduce child poverty in New York State by at least 50% within 10 years. And so that deadline's coming up at the end of 2031. So we have a lot of work to do in New York State. We have a very high rate of children living in poverty. And the council made a series of recommendations in its initial report that was released in December of 2024. The number one recommendation of the council was to increase the child tax credit. That's a credit that goes directly to households with children 16 years of age and younger. And we were really, really pleased that Governor Hochul introduced and the legislature expanded the child tax credit in New York State, effective with taxes that people were filing just this January. Significant and historic increases in that credit. It didn't go quite to the level that the council recommended, but it is a wonderful step in the right direction in terms of helping us reduce child poverty. And like I said, just this year, this is when we are starting to see those returns coming in, and the results are quite positive.
Yeah. Can you tell us about some of the guardrails or milestones that the council has put in place to ensure that you're able to hit that deadline of 2031 to have that final report?
Yeah, so it's in addition to our reporting, we do annual updates. We analyze and provide an update each year also of the executive budget in terms of what it's doing to address child poverty in New York State, and we will continue to focus on that and our recommendations. This year, we will be updating our recommendations because part of our, in addition to the child tax credit, there were other suggestions made about housing vouchers for families as well as certain public benefits. And part of our recommendation was to increase but also to index them. One reason we fall so far behind over time is that most of these benefits have no indexing to increase, have any kind of a COLA or cost of living increase every year. So we'll be updating our recommendations this year just to reflect that indexing and to keep calling attention to the need, both with, the governor, who clearly, I think, by our actions, we see is concerned about the well-being of children in New York State, and to continue to talk with other leaders in the legislature. And our council's made up of not just state representatives, but also individuals in the field who also are strong advocates to reduce child poverty.
Wow. Well, certainly sounds like a lot of important work ahead. Unfortunately, that is all the time we have for today. But we thank you so much for taking the time to connect with us today, Commissioner.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me.
And we were speaking with Barbara Gwynn, Commissioner of the New York State Office of Temporary and Disability Assistance.
Thank you so much, Chantel, for that. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. We'll hear from Chris Rowley from the Chuancan Journal. It's Friday on the Local Edition, and I'm your host, Patricio Rubio. Stay tuned.
You're listening to the Local Edition, winner of Excellence in Broadcasting Awards from the New York State Broadcasters Association. Radio Catskill. Listen local.
This is Radio Catskill. I'm Jason Dole with a quick update on the weather. Because the National Weather Service has extended the flash flood warning until 6:45 tonight for northwestern Sullivan, southwestern Delaware, and northeastern Wayne counties. Flooding is ongoing or expected to begin shortly in Hankins. Some locations that may experience flooding include Calicoon, Hancock, Peabrook, Stalker, Hankins, East Branch, Fishes Eddy, Equinunk, Harvard, and Hortonville. Do keep listening to Radio Catskill for more updates on the weather.
Welcome back to the Local Edition on a Friday evening. I'm your host, Patricio Robayo. Now we're going to check in with the one and only Chris Rowley from the Chuancan Journal. Let us know what's happening in Ellenville and Ulster County. Chris, the first story up is an Ulster County jury has convicted a Sullivan County man on multiple charges following a police chase through Ellenville last December. David Lloyd, who had a permanently revoked license, was found guilty of felony DWI, reckless driving, and fleeing the police and other charges. Chris, we can tell us about this.
Yeah, well, he was actually arrested. They got him in Ellenville. And this this gentleman needs help. I mean, there's no question. 46-year-old David Lloyd, Sullivan County resident, was found guilty July 29th in Ulster County by a trial jury. And it's the list of felonies is long and kind of frightening. But basically, he was already had a number of drunk driving arrests. He had no license. His license had been revoked. And he was basically found guilty of felony driving while intoxicated. He was seen in Kingston just jumping through a stop sign. Police pursued him. He ran from the police. He tried to back into a police cruiser at some point. Then he got onto 209 and raced south at high speed, probably drunk, but who can say, because this gentleman has got an issue with alcohol. He ran all the way down to Ellenville, where either he got a flat tire or something went wrong, and he couldn't carry on driving. He stopped, got out of the car, and ran, and state police, they nabbed him. I don't. This it's a tragedy that people get to this state where, you know, they can't stop themselves from drinking, and then they get drunk and they drive, and you know it's hard. You take away the license, you know, that makes it difficult to keep a car. But if you're determined and you know you don't care, then you'll do it, and ultimately you'll kill somebody. You know, that's the issue, really, isn't it? So anyway, he's. Senior Felony Assistant District Attorney Karen Intermill said in a statement, "This defendant has a long history of multiple offenses involving driving while under the influence of alcohol. This case is proof that he continues to represent a danger to the community. I'm grateful to the jurors for their attention and serious consideration in this case." So anyway, the sentencing will be in October. I have to hope, for his sake, that he gets a few years inside and they'll work on keeping him sober.
Is there a reason why it has taken so long to get to this point?
Oh, yeah. I mean, okay, this is a general comment from someone who doesn't really know his onions here, but my experience with the court system is it's vestigial. It's very small. It is limited. That we have a court system that's maybe one-tenth the size of what we need. Well, maybe that's wrong. Maybe a quarter of the size of what we need. They can't keep up.
Right.
There are too many cases, you know, and, I mean, they're all working hard. I mean, you know, Ulster County DA's office is a hive of activity, but they're hit with, you know, one felony after another, after another, after yeah. another, and they have to do what they can. But it's one of the reasons why the whole system depends on plea bargains, and they don't want you to go to court because you'll use up court time, and that's a precious resource.
Let's move on to a lighter story. There's a lot of stuff happening this weekend here in Sullivan County. On Sunday, we have the Bagel Festival, which is a long-running festival we have here running in Sullivan County. It's happening in Monticello. And also on Saturday, the Great Blueberry Festival.
I'll be there, taking photographs, walking up and down, saying hello to everybody. The Blueberry Festival will be on Saturday. There's more than 100 vendors. All kinds of weird stuff will be on sale. There could be very interesting foodstuffs. There was one time, I remember, there was a big trailer that is all about pickles. I thought, whoa, okay. And you can get pickles that are very hot. They've got a lot of hot pepper involved. So, you know, there will be another Blueberry Festival. I think the weather is going to be okay tomorrow, but probably bring an umbrella because there could be thunderstorms. You know, we all know what those are like now. I mean, I was out yesterday and there was one that came up I was over in Pine Bush and I saw the clouds. You know, and then they look really ominous.
The sky opened up. I went out for a late lunch, and the sky opened up, and it was just a lot of rain was coming down.
It was, and I was coming back over the mountain back to Ellenville, and there was some rain. Yeah, sure enough, and then suddenly, out of nowhere, bang! There's a fire hose hitting the front, hitting my windscreen. I mean, you can't see a thing.
Yeah,
you know, I mean, all you can do is slow down, get a creep. Hope you're getting to the side of the road, and just sort of wait there until it decides to let go. And yeah, and it only lasted maybe 5 or 6 minutes, and then that was over. And then you were back to normal rain. It's a little scary that it's so sudden and so violent, yeah. You know. But anyway, yeah, so that's always a possibility. This is the summer here in New York. It can happen, but it may not happen. I mean, these things are very tight little cells. So, so there will be the Blueberry Festival, a lot of fun. There will be a if you're a baker and you bake muffins, if you're proud of your blueberry muffins, if you've got to get there early, and beside the Hunt Memorial Building, there will be a place where you can enter your muffins to the blueberry muffin competition.
All right.
Then, and there will be a group that will be tasting and testing the muffins, which is a link to the original thing with this festival began with the idea that people would actually go up onto the mountain and harvest blueberries, which they called huckleberries then, and confusing two different species of berry, and that then they would bring the berries down and distribute them to restaurants and schools and things. And that was the original idea. And it's very sweet, but that has long since been abandoned. Let's say that, because okay. I think it's better to leave the berries up there for the bears.
Yeah.
They need them. So, you know, that will be on Saturday. It starts, I think, about 10, 15. If I was heading there, I'd try to get there before noon. Remember to put on a sunscreen and, you know, enjoy, you know, walking up and down Canal Street, meeting people, saying hello to people, admiring various costumes, T-shirts, dogs, whatever, and sampling some of the interesting things that will be on sale. Yeah. So there will be that. We'll be there. So you can always stop by at the Sean Gum Journal booth and say hello and ask, why didn't you write this? How often do we hear that one?
Oh,
you
yeah.
Didn't write
not only that, you hear that online also, like, but sometimes stories come out and say, oh, well, you know, we posted it before you guys and things like that, like a Facebook person or something like that. And you know, I try to hold back and I want to comment, but of course I hold back and basically say that, you know, real reporting takes time to verify the facts and get the story straight and make sure that we're not posting something that's the wrong information. Or
and we need to get quotations
yeah.
from people. We need people. Yeah. And when they hear that who they're quoting to, they freeze.
Yeah.
Suddenly a vision rises up in their head. Uh-oh, if I tell this guy this, then it's going to appear in print, and then I'll be haunted by this for the rest of my life.
Right.
No, it's not likely. No, don't worry. You know, just quote and work it out with the reporter what you're saying. Make sure you say it, you know. But, so that's part of it, too. Whereas if you're just rabbiting away on Facebook or Nextdoor or something, you can say whatever you like, and, yeah. You know, yeah, devil take the hindmost, you know. But, so there's a big difference.
A lot of things to do this weekend, it seems like. It's stuff in Ellenville on Saturday, and it's stuff in Sullivan County happening. So it's a busy weekend.
Right.
Every time the Bagel Festival comes around, I always feel like it's okay. This is like the tail end or the middle of the summer, and school starts in a few weeks after that.
So it's a big weekend for carbohydrates.
Yes. Blueberry muffins and bagels on Sunday. So.
Yeah. All right, well, everybody enjoy, and remember to put on that sunscreen.
Yeah, it's very important. So.
Yeah, well, I have seen people every year at one or other of these street festivals, and you could just tell they are going to have the worst next day because they haven't got screened, and they're already pink.
Yeah, it's scary because the threat of skin cancer and other ailments that could come from that, it's just, yeah. Breaks my heart sometimes when I see little kids who you could tell that said don't have sunscreen on.
I know it's not great to swap the goop on, but I will.
definitely. I'm paranoid, so I put a lot of sunscreen on everywhere and multiple times during the day because it could sweat off and things like that.
Right, and I'm using a 50.
Oh no, so, I use 90.
Oh God! I didn't know you could get that.
Oh yeah, they have 90. You can buy 90. I don't know. It makes more difference between a 50 or a 90. I don't know, but I'm not risking it.
Yeah, really. Yeah. All right. Well, everybody, have a great time, it's going to be a great weekend, summer weekend, and fun for everybody.
Definitely.
Take care now.
All right. Take care, Chris. Bye bye.
Bye-bye.
And that does it for The Local Edition. Again, I've been your host, Patricio Robayo. Jason Dole will be back on Monday with The Local Edition starting at 6 p.m. Everyone, have a great weekend. I'll talk to you soon. Lucy, have a good night. Everyone else, take care. Bye-bye.
WJFF Jeffersonville. From river to river, mountain to mountain, we are Radio Catskill.